Welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The intense debate around South Carolina's vote to lower a Confederate banner leads us to think about Maryland's relationship to symbols of the Civil War. Even during that war, Maryland was shot through with tension, a slave state that stayed in the Union. 150 years later, after a spring of racial unrest and even a riot in Baltimore, Maryland is taking some steps to examine the ways its past is reflected publicly. Although Governor Hogan has decided to stop issuing license plates with the Confederate symbol, he said yesterday he has no plans to go further. But Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake is appointing a task force to review the city's Confederate monuments and other historical sites. To help us think through how Maryland could use this moment to take a new look at how the history of slavery is conveyed in memorials and parks, we're joined by two scholars. Kate Drabinski is professor of gender and women's studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, UMBC. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And also here is Carsonia Wise Whitehead, assistant professor in the Department of Communications at Loyola University, Maryland. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
So, Kate Drabinski, give us a sense of the Confederate memorials in the state. They're all different, I guess, but when were they built? Who is being commemorated?
There are a number of Confederate memorials here in Baltimore, and they were built over a long period. So, for example, the one that people are talking a lot about right now, the Stonewall Jackson Robert E. Lee Memorial, that wasn't built until 1938, and it was privately funded. And most monuments are actually privately funded. And that was a man who always admired the Confederate generals in his youth. He died, and he left $100,000 to build the memorial. So there are, I think, five Confederate memorials. There's one to the Confederate women. There's only a couple that are to the Union. Part of that has to do with the role of Confederate monuments, right, which is not so much simply to honor the South, but also as a way of reincorporating the losers of the Civil War into the national project. Usually, when a war is won, there's one victor and the losers are vanquished. But in this case, you had to bring the losers back in.
Because it had been a civil war.
Yeah, it's a civil war, and so you need to reincorporate them. And so part of it was honoring the sort of courage and sort of aligning the Union and the Confederacy as if they were both fighting the same war, but it, almost as if they were on the same side. So you have more Confederate memorials, and part of that is about incorporating those losers back into national fabric.
When you say part of that is about, and maybe Kay Whitehead has a thought here too, when you say part of that is about incorporating, so are you saying both the Union side and the former advocates of the Confederacy wanted this to be a joint remembrance of history? Or are you saying the Union side, having won, just didn't feel like fighting about it anymore?
Oh, no. Both sides are trying to remember the war together. So after the Civil War, you have these like North-South veterans celebrations where they'll come to Gettysburg and they'll shake hands and sort of bringing together the sort of honoring both groups as if they are the same. And that's both the Union and the Confederate side are sort of invested in this same kind of nation building after the war.
This also impacted Reconstruction, because at the same time you have the North and the South trying to come together to become what we call the United States of America, you have this Reconstruction period taking place, mm-hmm. where they're trying to help the formerly enslaved Black Americans who are in these states or are now a part of the Union again. So you have people who had no education, who had no money, who had no goods, who had no services. And so the North sent down representatives to work to help them to figure out where they go with their lives. So you have these two tensions. I would argue they were tensions that were happening at the same time, because how do you reincorporate people back into this nation and saying, in a sense, we were on the same side. We were fighting, you know, you were fighting, but there's all this courage and this passion. At the same time, it was over the lives of people who wanted to be free. So what do we do with the 3 million enslaved, formerly enslaved Black Americans who were still trying to figure out, where do we go from here without any money, without literacy, without any goods? What happens to us?
Yeah, and part of what those memorials were doing was knitting together white Americans and sort of writing out of that history Black Americans and the formerly enslaved.
This knitting that took place, of course, has been the problem. Like, this is where we find ourselves today, this knitting together of white America. Then where does everyone else fall? If you're not part of this stitching, where do you fall in this pattern?
But I'm still left behind on the basic knitting, the basic knit and purl here. Because, as you pointed out, Kate, many of these memorials were built in the 20th century. They were built, mm-hmm. And I'm not saying the work of Reconstruction, I'm not saying that problems had been solved, Kay Whitehead, but I'm saying we were past the initial decade or two after the battles. We were mm-hmm. past the point where the victors needed to be really polite to the losers to make sure that they could go forward together. And still these memorials were built.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's part of how public memory works, that it is motivated at different points. So the same sort of memory can be used to work through different contemporary moments. Like I'm thinking about Baltimore's memory of the Battle of Baltimore in 1814, and we used it as a way to celebrate the rebirth of the city. Baltimore's the most important city in America, which I totally agree with, and sort of using the war as a way to work through other issues. So for example, in the early 1900s, the Daughters of the Confederacy, around 1905, they started raising money to build a memorial on the National Mall to the Mammy. We barely dodged that bullet thanks to World War I. But the Senate actually approved $20,000 towards this memorial. Right. And so we're long past slavery, but we're still working through the issues of the relationship between freedom and slavery, between white Americans and black Americans, and these different periods of history. We're still fighting over the meaning of the war, I think.
I would agree with that. I also want to add that when we start talking about the time period that Kate had mentioned when some of these memorials were built, you mean the 1930s, you have to think of where America was at that time around race relations. This was before the big push around the civil rights movement. So these issues around the war, I think, were still being figured out. I think they're still being figured out today, in fact.
Well, yeah, but that's exactly why, with my meager understanding of history, I look at a monument that was put up in the 30s.
Yes.
When race relations were so tense. And it doesn't seem to me that it's about knitting together the losers and the winners. It seems to me it's about telling people what their place is.
And it's about further removing people from this pattern that we call the American memory and American history. I absolutely agree with you. And I think that is one of the main points in a discussion today. So what do we do with these memorials? If they were put up, and in one sense what Kate said, to kind of stitch and keep the thread between the North and the South, or if they were put up in what you said as a way of further reminding people that you are not a part of American history, well, all of this tension is at this place now. So what do we do? Is it simply about renaming these memorials? Is it about pulling them down? Is it about continuing to spray paint Black Lives Matter across them? Like, what do we do with these memorials today?
That's Professor Carsonia Wise Whitehead, assistant professor at Loyola University, Maryland, here on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Kate Drabinski, professor of gender and women's studies at UMBC. We're talking about how Maryland is taking stock of Confederate symbols. You mentioned the Black Lives Matter. I presume you're referring to the graffiti at the at the Lee Jackson statue in Wyman Park a couple of weeks ago. What do you think about that graffiti?
I think it's great.
You think it's great?
I think it's great. I think that those memorials are about telling people what their place is, and they're about knitting white people together, right, across.
Both.
Right, they're about both of those things. And so I think when I think about the memorials and what should be done with them, one thing I think they're good for is an occasion for a conversation about how white supremacy continues to formulate itself and make its own arguments, right?
And so to spray painting them is part of that conversation?
So to spray paint it is to add something to the conversation. I think that treating them as if they cannot be defaced. I mean, look around Baltimore. This is a city full of defacement, right, where neighborhoods bear the scars of these decades and decades of disinvestment. So to get really concerned, from my perspective, about this particular defacement, when it could be, means like a moment of a real conversation, right? I think that would be misplaced.
I also thought it was quite wonderful. I love the acts of resistance. I love the feeling that Harriet Tubman talked about, where, you know, she was just a mosquito on the back of the giant's hand. And even though she wasn't going to take the giant down, she was going to annoy him as much as possible while she was there. That this act of defacing these memorials is focusing the attention on whether or not these memorials should continue to stand, and should they stand with the names that are attached to them. It is a way of bringing all these things into the public space. I put that along with, you know, the idea of climbing the flagpole and bringing down the Confederate flag, you know, that kind of public art, that way of showing an act of resistance that I think is necessary to make us have these conversations. I mean, there are some more extreme ways that people are standing up against things that I don't necessarily agree with. I think about what happened in Charleston. I think about that whole act of white supremacy. You defaced a statue, like you painted Black Lives Matter over a Confederate statue. That's a moment for a conversation. And it's not a moment of concern. It's a moment for a conversation.
And one of the questions you said it raises is, should the monument continue to stand? Should the Lee Jackson Monument in Wyman Park continue to stand, in your view?
Well, I think that we should talk about what the statue stands for. I think in so many ways, whether it's taking down the flag or renaming all these statues, those are just acts that really just doesn't get to the heart and the minds of people. When we talk about supremacy, when we talk about race, and we talk about classism, it's not about a statue. Like, the flag doesn't make you do it. The Lee Jackson statue doesn't make you do it. It's what do these things stand for in terms of who is a part of America and whose conversation actually matters. That is what I think should be happening. We talk about changing the names, get to what the heart of it is. It's not about the name. It's not about the memorial. It's about what it stands for and what is the message that it sends to people day in and day out.
I mean, think if we actually had a genuine conversation about what that statue is honoring, right? So people have argued Robert E. Lee, he was against slavery. He was just loved Virginia. And so that's why, you know, he didn't own slaves himself. So he's just a great general. He's a great mastermind. Like, what if we thought about what it means to honor someone for being a really good strategist when their project is the permanent enslavement of Black Americans? I mean, we could have really interesting, rich conversations, but if we just tear the statues down, then we've removed the occasion for the conversation.
So does that mean, I presume you're alluding to, in part, to Robert E. Lee Park, which Baltimore County runs. Mm-hmm. County Executive Kevin Cavanitz has said it ought to be renamed. Mm-hmm. You're saying maybe no, that name should hang there as something to spark a conversation?
Personally, I think we should rename it. I think we should rename it like Lake Roland or something like that. But I think that should be at the end of a bunch of conversations, right? We shouldn't try to put the symbols in a cage and then act like we've done something real. And maybe, you know, maybe at the end of these conversations, we do take down the Lee Jackson Memorial. I don't know. But we're sort of at the beginning of conversations, not at the end. You know, and these are conversations that started when we started remembering the Civil War, you know, in 1861, you know. So we have a long time before we figure out what we're going
to
do.
And we may never get to a point where just taking down the statue or changing the name will be the answer. I think that's an easy fix. I think it makes us feel good. It makes us feel like we're enlightened. We recognize that there have been problems in the past. So we'll change it by just changing the name. So we changed the name of the park to Harriet Tubman Park. That doesn't change the current economic situation for people that are low income and living in impoverished communities in Baltimore City. Now let's talk about what it stands for, what it means, and what it has meant to the lives of Black people in this city, when we have all these memorials honoring this notion of separation, this notion of not being valid, this notion of having your lives not matter. Let's talk about that and how we can put some dollars behind changing that. And then we can talk about whether the statue should stay or not. The statue is not changing my life. What's happening in the school system, what's happening within these deserts where we have, in the areas where Freddie Gray lived, that is what is most important. Not the statue, not the name of the park, but what it stands for.
There is another remnant of Confederate symbolism that is not in stone. It's in music.
The old line bugle, fife, and drum. Maryland, my Maryland. She is not dead, nor deaf, nor dumb. Huzzah, she spurns the northern scum. She breathes, she burns, she'll come, she'll come.
That is the last verse of the Maryland State Song, commonly called Maryland, My Maryland. The legislature adopted it as the state song in 1939, but the lyrics were written during the Civil War, a call for Maryland to leave the Union. There have been periodic proposals in the legislature to change the lyrics. The last effort failed in 2009.
I mean, this song, it was the second most, after Dixie, the second most popular song sung by Confederate soldiers during the Civil War. So for it to be the state song is to me appalling. And as much as I think symbolic change is sometimes just symbolic, I also think it can have a real effect, right? So when I'm asked to sing a song, the words are put into my mouth and I have to own them somehow when I say them out loud. So what if we had a state song where we had to honor instead of, you know, hating those northern scum, if, you know, instead we had to think about, and we sang a song about Harriet Tubman, and everybody had to think about Harriet Tubman, who she was and what she meant and what her hatred for the state of Maryland meant, right? If we really had to put that in our mouths, I think that would be pretty interesting.
I am in support of changing the song probably as quickly as possible. I mean, Virginia should not call in vain. Maryland should answer the call against the northern scum. I mean, that to me is a lot more significant and a lot more important than the name of the park, because they play this. If you go to different places around the city, this song is played, parts of it anyway. I think this makes a statement that something that we can change very, very quickly. Whether or not the song becomes a song about Harriet Tubman or about Frederick Douglass, or maybe just a song about the strength of Baltimore. It doesn't even have to be about a person. It can be about Baltimoreans as a whole, Maryland as a whole, and what we do to be better.
We'll leave it there. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Carsonia Wise Whitehead is assistant professor in the Department of Communications at Loyola University, Maryland. Kate Drabinski is a professor of gender and women's studies at UMBC. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. More of this interview there, too. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning, the art of classical guitar. Stay with us on 88.1.